pass he's ever caught. Solely looking for Owens. Jump ball. What a catch. Did you see that? It's first down. Cats inside the 15. Into the end zone. Chad Owens. Touchdown. Fifth touchdown pass of the night for Kolaros. That's a new career best. First and goal.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham.
How you doing this week, Mike?
I'm pretty good. A lot of CFL news, so it's starting to get that time of year where you get excited for the season to start, even though it's months away still.
It always comes so fast. It feels like everyone always talks about, I think we talked about it last time too. Everyone talks about how the season is so short and the off season is so long and we have all this time, but doesn't it feel like just yesterday that they awarded the Grey Cup and now we're sitting here doing a free agency preview because we're in the middle of February?
Time flies.
Time sure really does fly. Speaking of time flying, before we get into some CFL stuff, I had to ask you, did you watch this was the XFL 30 for 30 that ESPN did, came out about a week ago?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, it was really good. And, the XFL was only around for 1 year, but it did make an impact.
Well, they mentioned in the doc, as you know, how much of an impact they made just with the technological advances, like the Skycam and stuff. I thought it was fantastic. I've never watched a 30 for 30 that wasn't fantastic, so this was no surprise. But it made me miss it. It made me miss the XFL. It was only around for 1 year, like you said. And it fit perfectly in that lull between the start of the NFL and, for us, the start of the CFL. Because if I recall correctly, it started in February, like the week after the Super Bowl. And I want to say it ended in like mid-April, which would have been around that time, like when the NFL draft's about to happen and the CFL draft's to happen. And it would have made the offseason even shorter than it is now. It's funny. I'm sitting here going, man, I really wish that would have worked.
Yeah, it definitely was interesting. It started off with a boom. The ratings were through the roof in the States, and then it kind of fell off the cliff. I mean, we've seen league after league after league come in and not necessarily try to compete with the NFL, but just be an alternative, you know, when the NFL is not in season, and it doesn't work. It hasn't worked for many leagues, you know, the USFL, the UFL, the list goes on and on. Of leagues that try to prop up themselves, and they're just not the NFL. And you got the NFL and you got college football, and those are the big two in the States. So yeah, it was a great documentary, and it would be nice to fill that gap with a little bit of football. I guess you got the Arena League now, but it's basically impossible to find on Canadian television.
Yeah, and the Arena League's not as popular as it was like 10, 15 years ago, maybe just after the XFL, because I think people are still looking for that football alternative that, let's find something in the springtime to ease our football withdrawal. But I don't think it ever really recovered. I want to say that they canceled a season when the economy tanked like 10 years ago. And I don't think ever since then it really found its footing once more. There's fans out there, but it wasn't what it used to be. They had a video game at one point. So now you just don't – it's just not as part of the zeitgeist as it used to be.
Well, I think they used to be on par or maybe even a little bit above for paying players like of the CFL, and then they went out of business for a year, came back, and now the paychecks are relative, like really small, like maybe $500 a game or something like that. So yeah, they're not on the same level as they were 10, 15 years ago.
Getting back to the doc, did you notice that there was a couple CFL players, one in particular that I noticed in the doc? And I think people forget that there were a lot of CFL players that played in the XFL. But did you see Jermaine Copeland, former wide receiver, former coach for the Hamilton Tiger Cats, actually? Like, actually, and I'm fairly certain that it was him.
Yeah.
I want to say he played for LA, which I believe is the team that won the championship. And I'm pretty certain I saw him, like, yapping at the camera, like, from archival footage. Did you see that, too?
Yes, I did. I even that they might have interviewed him for it, but I'm not sure. But I do remember seeing Jermaine Copeland in the doc.
Yeah, and I know that Kelvin Anderson, if people remember him, he was a former running back for the Calgary Stampeders back in the late 90s and early 2000s. Noel Prefontaine played in the league. There were a bunch, and I'm sure
John Avery?
John
Did
Avery,
Avery?
yes, it just came to me. I want to say he played for Chicago, maybe New York, and I think they showed him in the documentary as well. Like not like they showed Copeland. Like Copeland was literally talking to the camera probably after scoring a touchdown. But yeah, they showed Avery. I think he was carrying the ball. He might have even fumbled, but yeah, I'm pretty sure he was in the league too.
When he played for Edmonton his first 2 years, he was an amazing running back. I just remember being just overjoyed to watch him play because he was so talented. So just wanted to throw that out there.
No, John Avery was a hell of a back. He's one of those guys who, a lot like Corey Boyd, if you remember him from a few years ago, kind of had a couple years where he just looked like a world beater and then kind of disappeared. Didn't Avery go to Toronto? And
Yeah, I
wasn't
did.
he in wasn't he there when Ricky Williams got there? Weren't they the like a tandem at running back?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah, it's just interesting. Like again, like I said about the XFL, like just going back and being like, damn, I wish it would have succeeded, and then seeing some familiar faces from the Canadian Football League, which again, people might not know that there were a lot of CFL guys that played in the XFL. And if you haven't watched the documentary, even just to see Jermaine Copeland or John Avery, like Mike mentioned, give it a look. It's fantastic. It's about an hour and a half long. It's a great watch, and you'll see some familiar faces, and maybe you'll also get nostalgic for the days of the XFL.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with those 30 for 30s. And we were talking about it before we started recording. TSN should do some more documentaries like the 30 for 30, like they did the year the 100th Grey Cup was going on. It'd just be nice. The CFL is not necessarily documented as well as other professional leagues, the history and all that. So it'd be nice to kind of dig that up in documentary form.
Well, we heard a lot in the NFL, not to go too much into the Super Bowl that just happened, but we've heard a lot about how certain player for the New England Patriots now the greatest player to ever play in the history of football. And I take exception to that. I think there's a lot of great players that we are dismissing. And you always hear about the Super Bowl era when it comes to the NFL. And it seems like the guys who played before the Super Bowl kind of get lost to time. And we sort of see that. With the CFL, yes, there's still people out there who talk about Russ Jackson and Ron Lancaster and Angelo Mosca and some of like the all-time greats. But there's a lot of great players that played in the 20s and played in the 30s and played in the 40s that we have forgotten about. And it would be nice if it's probably going to be very hard to find footage of them. But even something like a 30-minute documentary that they shoot and kind of talk about some of these players that maybe played for teams in years when it wasn't as popular or that we haven't discussed as much. It'd be nice to kind of let those guys have their chance in the sun because it's been 50, 60, 70 years since they played the game, and they're unfortunately going to get, and these could be great players, they kind of get lost to time. So I'm with you. I wish TSN, now I know obviously no resources are limited and maybe the appetite and the audience isn't there, but for the hardcore fans, I think it could be something that could really work. Maybe even something as small as like the CFL website itself, making a short like 10-minute doc on someone and throwing it up on their website or on their YouTube page. I think there's a way that we can look at the past and sort of reignite our love of guys from a bygone era that maybe a lot of people don't know.
Yeah, I'd like to see a doc on the 60s Ticats. I believe they won the cup in 63, 65, and 67. Now, that would be a great era to cover. Just even maybe the Ticats on their website. That'd be really cool.
Yeah, I believe one of those teams, again, obviously well before you or I were ever born. I hear a lot of older fans, I want to say it's the 63 team, but I could be wrong, say that that's the greatest team, CFL team of all time. I think that's the team that, like, they went, like, the last 10 games, including the playoffs, without allowing a touchdown.
Oh,
They
wow.
blew team, like, it was apparently this team was the definition of a juggernaut. So yeah, you're right. I wish it. And the 60s aren't that far back. We still talk about the AFL when we talk about American football, and that was basically all in the 1960s. So yeah, I'm with you, man. I wish that the league would maybe step up. And I know it's not easy, and I know the resources are limited and that all that stuff, but it would be nice to sort of get some glimpses into the past and maybe sort of let us appreciate the guys that we didn't get a chance to see.
Yeah, exactly. That would be very cool.
So, are you ready to talk some Ticat stuff? Because we got a lot to talk about, sir.
Yes, let's do it.
All right. First and foremost, let's get some player news out of the way. There's been one definitive re-signing for this team since you and I last sat down, and that is left tackle Xavier Fulton has decided to stay in Hamilton, inking a 2-year contract extension. You were a big proponent and a big fan of his when he came over last year. I got to think you're overjoyed at this news.
I am extremely happy. I talked about it before, and I thought that he played awesome when he came over from Saskatchewan last year. And, he really helped out Zach Claros get some time back in the pocket. So I had been harping on the O-line like all last year and maybe even before that. And I'm very happy with the signing. I think that they have a solid group in the middle of Canadians, and adding this American tackle who did a great job is a very good thing for this team.
Well, I think it just solidifies a position, the left tackle position, that has been in flux for about a year and a half now, ever since Jake Olson got hurt in the exact same game that Zach Caleros got hurt in 2015, missed all of last year, missed the end of the 2015 season, and then we saw, Terrence Campbell and Joel Figueroa and Brian Simmons, and there's been a lot of guys that they've thrown in at that left tackle position, and Fulton is a guy who, he's up there, a little up there in age, mid-30s, early to mid-30s, I believe, someone who's, you know, the years are definitely behind him. He's got less of a career in front of
he's
him.
He's only 30.
He's only 30? What? I think he was older.
Yep. Yeah,
oh, well, you know what? Well, thank you for the correction. I take back pretty much everything I said. This makes a signing. For some reason, I thought he was older than that. I feel like he's been around forever. Maybe I'm the one that's getting old.
Yeah, it could be. I thought he was older than that, too. But, yeah, it says he was born in 86, 30 years old.
Oh, my God. He's younger than me. Christ. Oh, anyway,
yep.
You know what? I was on board with this re-signing regardless of his age, but this makes it even better. Now you have four positions on that offensive line. You have, like you mentioned, three Canadians, Bombin, Filer, and Revenberg. You have now Fulton in there. That leaves really one empty spot, which is the right tackle position, which Jeremy Lewis, I thought, has done a very good job at handling, but he also was hurt last year. You have Brian Simmons. You still have Peter Diakowski. Jake Olson is still signed to this team. You and I, for the longest time, probably since day one of this show, have talked about the need for this team to solidify the offensive line. And it's taken almost 3 years, but it sure looks like this offensive line could be one of the league's best with the guys that they have.
Yeah, and they re-signed Landon Rice. So that's another guy that they're bringing in, a national, bringing back. So, yeah, all of a sudden it looks like they have quite a bit of depth on the offensive line, which, you know, surprises me.
Well, yeah, and it looks like offensive line will not be an area where this team will be looking at in free agency. There's some great offensive linemen available, Nolan McMillan in Ottawa, and we'll get into free agency a little bit later, but the two off the top of my head are McMillan in Ottawa and Derek Dennis, but I think the Ticats take themselves out of the running for either of those guys. Maybe not McMillan, because I think McMillan can play right tackle, and that would be – playing four Canadians on the offensive line would be fantastic, but I don't think you're going to see Derek Dennis sign with the Ticats. Because he plays left tackle, and they've signed Fulton. I think that's a great move. Get him for probably significantly cheaper than you'll get a guy like Derek Dennis, which helps build the roster elsewhere. I know the Tech Cats have not signed a lot of people so far this offseason, but this to me is their best signing so far, I think.
When I saw him sign on Twitter or wherever it was, I was very happy, and I think it's a huge signing. I think it'll make Zach Claros better. He'll be more comfortable knowing that there's a guy at left tackle that's going to protect him.
So are you worried at all about the lack of the team's re-signings? We actually got a question, and I was going to do it in the questions portion, but I figured it actually would work here. It was basically like, should fans be worried that the team has not re-signed many of their players? And is it possible that all the changes in the coaching staff is a reason why the team has been reluctant to bring some guys back? Where do you kind of stand on this? Personally, I'm not worried, because if you look around the league, you'll see that not a ton of players have re-signed. So for me, I'm not too concerned. I think a lot of guys want to test the market, and then we'll see where they stand, and some will leave, some will come back. I'm not super worried. Are you?
I'm not overly worried, no. There's a lot of names here that I'm looking at that are free agents, but it's like that on every team in the CFL. So like you said, there hasn't, you know, other teams haven't been signing like crazy. I think that as we get closer to February 15th, and maybe even after that, players will be re-signed. Important players will be coming back. So, yeah, I think that this, the coaching changes could maybe have something to do with it, but I still think Ken Austin is the guy. He's in charge, and I think players will re-sign eventually, and we'll get some free agency as well. So, no, I'm not overly concerned.
As big as the Fulton news is, there's a report that came out. We were recording this on Friday night. Hopefully we'll have this up sometime Saturday or Sunday, but this came out just before you and I sat down that another player is possibly on the verge of sticking with the Ticats, and that's Terrence Tolliver. Matthew Schinetti of TSN tweeted out around 7 o'clock that it looks like the Ticats and Tolliver are very close on a new deal. This, to me, is great news. I thought Terrence Tolliver last year might have been the team's best receiver, not named Andy Fantuz. Super reliable, had over 1,000 yards. You can see from year one to year two him make the leap. He's tall, he's fast. I just think this is fantastic news, and there's a lot of receivers that are going to be available in free agency. There's a Ticats have a lot of guys that could be heading elsewhere. To get Tolliver, who when I wrote for Three Down Nation way back when the free agent list was revealed, the guys that could potentially be free agents, he was my number one guy. This is the number one guy the Ticats got to bring back, and now it sounds like they're really close to bringing him back. This is nothing but great news.
Absolutely. Last year he took off. He was dominant at times. And, tall guy, has speed, has a connection with Caleros. I also think this is a great move, and I'm really happy that he's back. I was kind of worried that he might not be back. So the report by Schinetti is great news, and I'm sure it is true, and should be great to see him back in black and gold. And I think he'll have an even better year this season with Caleros starting the season.
Yeah, he only played 13 games last year. He played 13 games the year before. So in 2015 and 13 games, he had 48 catches for 679 yards and 6 TDs. Year later, same amount of games, 65 catches, 1,036 yards, 9 touchdowns. He, at times, like you said, he was dominant. He went on a run around mid-season. Oh, here, it's right here. He Winnipeg August the 3rd, he had 7 catches for $1.20. Then on August the 20th against Saskatchewan, he had 5 catches for $1.39 and a touchdown. The following week against Calgary, 9 catches, 183 yards, 2 touchdowns. 2 weeks later, Labor Day against Toronto. Or no, the Labor Day rematch, my bad. 5 catches, 111 yards and a touchdown. He just produced. That's all he did. He just went out there and he produced. He had big games. He became a guy that Caleros could rely on. And with a quarterback like Zach, who likes to throw deep, big arm, having a tall, speedy guy like Tolliver back in the lineup, couldn't be happier.
Yeah, and you think about next season, the potential. If, bringing back Fulton with the depth on the offensive line, Caleros is sitting back there. He's got a talented guy like Tolliver coming back. I mean, there's the potential there for a really productive offense. So that's just exciting in itself.
Well, and also, and this is the thing I think a lot of people aren't talking about, is Zach Caleros didn't finish the season injured. He's not rehabbing a knee injury, so this guy's going to have a full off season. He's going to be at minicamp when that rolls around, probably in April. He's going to be there day one of training camp, and I think that is going to allow this team to solidify itself a lot sooner than it did last year. They were Jekyll and Hyde. Let's call it as it is. They had bouts where they looked like they were unbeatable, and then they looked like they couldn't beat a peewee team. And I think if this team can stay healthy, and this team is going to go into the season, hopefully, fingers crossed, as healthy as they've ever been, I think this team could get off to a really good start and maybe pick up some of that 2015 magic that we waited so long for last year that just never came.
I'm hoping, man. I'm really hoping, because the last 5-10 years, we've seen Ticats team get off to the 0-3, 0-4 starts. It gets frustrating. People say that the season starts after Labor Day, but I want to get some wins early in the season this year.
I'm with you, man. I understand the sentiment of the season doesn't start until Labor Day. I do. But at the same time, those wins in July and August count just the same as the ones due in September and October. So get the wins when you can. It's tough to win in this league. Get them early. Then you're not scrambling late to make the playoffs like this team has done almost every year of the last 20 or so years.
Yeah. Let's do it. Let's start off hot, and then
just stay hot.
Keep it going.
Start hot and stay hot. It's that's all we ask for. We don't ask for too much around here.
just be perfect, and that's all we ask for.
18-0 in a Grey Cup championship, right?
Yeah, exactly.
One last bit of news here. The Ticats finally announced their coaching staff. We finally have a name to our new special teams coordinator. It is Dennis McKnight. I don't know much about McKnight, except for what I've read in pieces on Three Down Nation and CFL.ca, but it seems as if he's got a bit of a relationship with Jeff Reinbold from their days at Southern Methodist. He has some CFL experience. It was with Edmonton, I think you said, before the show.
Yep.
He was running back coach, I think you said, in Edmonton.
2011, he was running back. Yeah, 2011, he was running backs coach.
So he's got a little CFL experience, but he's a little bit of an unknown commodity. So we're going to get a new special teams coordinator in here. It's going to be interesting to see what his philosophies are as compared to Reinbold's, because we know Reinbold was a little bit of a gambler, loved to do the trick plays, and usually was very successful with them. So it'll be interesting to see what this team looks like with a new special teams coordinator.
Yeah, it should be very interesting. We've talked about Reinbold's success in the past, obviously in the last 3 or 4 years that he's been here, and I'm sure that Dennis and him will be collaborating a lot with the special teams unit, just giving them throwing ideas at each other. And I'm just happy that Reinbold is still here to lend a helping hand. Not that McKnight necessarily needs it or anything, but yeah, like you said, I don't know much about this guy, but we'll see how it goes.
Unknown can be exciting too, though. Maybe other
Yep.
teams in this league don't know what this guy's about and probably could surprise him. As long as he gets the nuances of the game, which, having a guy like Reinbold around could help with if he's not entirely familiar. But he does have that year of experience, so I know it's not much, but he has coached here before, and I think that does speak to his ability to maybe be able to adapt a lot quicker than someone who hadn't. Because this CFL game's a lot different. He spent most of his time in the NCAA, which is a very different game than the Canadian game, so it's going to be interesting to see what we see out of the special teams this year. And to be honest with you, I'm kind of excited. Some fresh blood can bring some fresh ideas and some new things. And I'm curious to see what the special teams looks like, because it's probably the least talked about aspect of the game, but it's just as important as the offense
Cool.
and the defense.
Yeah, so especially in the CFL, it's so important for field position and points, and it's really magnified in the Canadian game, the special teams units. And another thing is Steph Potasik. Is he going to be full out calling the offensive plays this year? Because I know that he was kind of on a leash last season, but he's listed as the offensive coordinator for next season. So I wonder if that leash is off and he has full reins to call the plays now.
Sounds like it. In the piece I read, it sounds like they're going to give him, it's going to be his offense. And obviously last year, with how late in the process Tommy Condell left, it was going to be tough for Potasik to pick it up and to be fully immersed. But he's now had a season under his belt, and it'll be interesting to see kind of where he goes. Obviously he has very similar philosophies with Ken Austin, otherwise this wouldn't work. But he's going to probably try some new things as well, and that could also be exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. I like seeing Canadian coaches in the CFL, especially at high up on the coaching chart, such as offensive coordinator. So it's nice to see.
Yeah, and again, this cannot be stressed enough. He's going to get to work with Zach from day one. This is not going to be, I got to tailor my game plan to Jeremiah Mazzoli, and then I got to tailor it to Zach Caleros. This is going to be from mini camp on. Let's install the offense that works best to Zach Caleros' strengths, and I think that will lead this team to be maybe a bit better come the early parts of the season.
Fingers crossed, dude. Fingers crossed.
Speaking of the early parts of the season, this kind of surprised me a little bit that we can talk about this, but Mike, the schedule was released. We know when and where the Hamilton Tiger Cats will be playing in 2017, as well as the rest of the league, obviously, but we're a Ticats podcast, so we focus on them. I was shocked that we got this before free agency. I figured we'd probably get free agency, and then there'd be a bit of a lull, and then that Thursday or Friday after free agency opens, when all the big, like you get a few big signings the first couple of days and it kind of slows down. I thought, bam, that's right when they'd hit it. But this was good to me because they get it out of the way before free agency starts, and it gives it a chance for us to sit here and talk about it. Ticats schedule, I'm not going to go through every game. I think that's tedious. If you want to find the Ticats schedule, there are a million places to find it. But I wanted to talk to you, like, what about the schedule? You've obviously had a chance to look at it. What do you like? What do you dislike? Where do you think it's a good schedule? Do you think it's a bad schedule? What are your thoughts on the schedule?
I think that the people doing the schedule, it's a pretty hard job, just because in the CFL there you have to work around so many things. Teams are sharing stadiums and all that kind of stuff. So it's I'm sure it's a very hard job to get around all that. But I love the Toronto, the Hamilton Toronto game opening up the season for the Ticats and the Argos in Toronto. I think they should always do that every year. They did it last year and they did it this year, so I'm really happy about that. I think it starts the season off in Toronto with a big crowd because the Ticat fans are going to show up, and I think more so the Argo fans will show up to a game against Hamilton. So I love that. I like the Edmonton Calgary back to back in August just because I live in Edmonton and thinking about going to both games. So I like that. I don't necessarily like the stretch that they go on in August, I think. Let me take a look here. Yes, so they play Edmonton August 4th, Winnipeg 12th, and Ottawa the 18th. So that's 3 games in 14 days. That's a lot, but a lot of teams have had to deal with that, so you can't complain too much. I actually like the Not the usually they do the back-to-back games, Labor Day, Hamilton, Toronto, and then the rematch, 5 days later in Toronto. And a lot of fans would probably like that, but I'm not a huge fan of the back-to-back games in any situation. I don't want to see a team twice in a row. So I like that they spaced out. They have the first Toronto game, the first game of the season, then Labor Day, and then they play them again later in the season. So I like the spacing of that. Honestly, there's lots to like about the schedule. If you're a season ticket holder, it looks to me that a lot of the games are on Saturday, or Friday and Saturday. So, that's a really good thing about the schedule for fans. So I like that.
Okay, so I'm going to disagree with you about the Labor Day rematch, and here's why. It's
All
not
right.
because I want it. It's oh, you got to have it. It's because I don't like the fact that the Ticats are going to play on a Monday, and they're playing Monday night, and then they have to. And it's really just this is a very specific to this year, is then they have to turn around and they're playing 5 days later or 6 days later. Let me pull up the schedule just to make sure I'm not wrong here.
Yeah, it's
They play
five.
5 days later in Ottawa against the Red Blacks. And I don't like this because I feel like this provides too much of a competitive advantage for Ottawa because they play the Friday previous. So they get a full week off in which to prepare for this game. The Ticats only get 5 days. One of them's going to be a rest day, so they're going to get 2 days of practice in. And I know, and I've heard the people who say, oh, don't worry about it. Players don't think about it. And I agree with that. But what I don't like is just the fact that these guys are going to be beat up from having played on Monday, have to play again on Friday. If the game was in Hamilton, I think I'd be a little less upset about it. And it's again, it's not because they're not playing Toronto. I don't like the idea of one team playing on such a long rest and, or like a regular rest and one team playing on a short rest. I feel like it provides too much of a competitive disadvantage for the one team. And it's a division game. I look at this game on the schedule right now, and I'm marking that as a loss, to be perfectly honest with you. I don't think we are going to see them be able to turn it around, and I hope I'm wrong. I just don't like that. We saw it a few years ago. They played Toronto on Labor Day, and then they had a home game against Montreal, and Anthony Calvillo didn't play, and Adrian McPherson started, and the Owls came in here and kicked the tar out of the Ticats. They were tired. They were beaten up from playing a very physical game the Monday before. So the only reason I like the Labor Day rematch, not because I think teams need to play back-to-back. I'm with you on that. I prefer when teams don't play back-to-back. But in this situation, if they could play a team that was on equal or close to equal rest, I'd be okay with it. The problem there is Calgary, Edmonton, Winnipeg, and Saskatchewan are really the only four teams they could possibly play, and none of them are available because they do play their rematch the following week. So the Argos get a bye week, which I think is good. Like that's where I would side with. Okay, give them a bye week, or if the case that's the case. Give them BC. At least make it a non-division game. You know what I mean? Because if they lose to Ottawa, and that's a division loss, it just doesn't sit well with me. I'm not going to sit here and complain about it too vociferously, but it's just something I don't like all that much. Outside of that, however, I'm not a big fan of the team having bye weeks so early in the season. I think they have week 2 and week 10. I wish those would be spaced out a little bit more. I'm not complaining too much about the week 2 bye week because, you know, there's Winnipeg's off week 1. There's got to be a team off week 2. That's fine. I just kind of wish maybe, you know, week 13, week 14, maybe that would be a little bit better as opposed to having 2 and then they got to go on this huge stretch of games here. I'm not too happy about that. And again, I'm also not too happy about how late this team has their home opener once again. I understand, you know, they have the early bye week. They do play in Toronto, so that's a chance for people from Hamilton to go to the game. But again, this team hasn't had an opening week home game since 2012. And I feel like, you know, for a lot of times with, you know, the Pan Am games, the stadium wasn't open in time. It was really not, had nothing to do with what they were doing. But it just always seems like this team has one of the later home openers, and to push it to week 4 this week feels a little long. But again, these are minor quibbles, and I know that the guys who do the schedule, actually, do you listen to the Waggle podcast, the CFL's official podcast with Davis Sanchez and James Cebulski by any chance?
Yeah, I've listened to it before.
Yeah, so this week's they had the schedule maker on there. I want to say his name's Trevor Hardy. I hope I remembered that correctly. They had him on there, and they talked to him about the process of putting the schedule together. And it is an immense undertaking and very difficult to get perfect. And no schedule is going to be perfect. I do think the Ticats got a pretty good schedule, to be perfectly honest. There are some things, and these are minor quibbles. The only one that I really don't like is the lack of a rematch, and I've said why I don't like that. But you look at this, and their schedule is really well-balanced. They have 9 home games this year, 4 of which take place in the first half of the season, and 5 take place in the second half of the season. That's pretty darn good balance. If they don't have a road trip longer than 2 games, they don't have a home stand longer than 2 games. Like, I think this is a fairly decent schedule. It could be better. It could be a lot worse. So I'm just happy, to be honest with you, that we have a schedule to look at, because now we can really start getting excited for the season, because now it's like, oh my god, this is official. Like, we know where we're going to be on which days. If anyone wanted to kill me, they just need to look at the Ticats schedule and know exactly where I'm going to be 18 days this year. And I'm with you too. That back-to-back Alberta trip, the Calgary and Edmonton, that's exciting for me, because I think I'm going to try my darndest to get out there for both those games, because it'd be great. Be able to go to Alberta for a week, kill off both stadiums in one trip, and I get to see, you know, 2 more Ticats games. Get to go hang out with you in Edmonton for a little bit. Get to go see some people in Calgary. Get to go to Calgary and Edmonton for the first time ever. I don't know. I'm going to do my best. I make no promises. I'm not promising you anything. I'm not promising anyone anything. I'm going to try really, really hard to be there in McMahon in July and then in Commonwealth, probably sitting with you, my friend, in August to watch these games, because I've wanted them to be back-to-back for so long, because I figured that would be the best way to see. Like, that would be the best use of my time to go to Alberta. Instead of going for like 3 or 4 days to see one team, I want to go out there for a week and see both. And they did it this year. And if I can find one person that's willing to take the trip out there with me, I can't see why I wouldn't be there. And then you and I could sit and watch a Ticats game together.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I'm looking forward to that very much if it happens. And, you know, I mentioned the stretch in August there, they didn't have much time off, but you're looking in September, and that's even worse. You know, you got September 4th to September 22nd, 4 games. I mean, that's pushing it. That's a rough schedule right there in September.
Yeah, like, but you know what? Every team's got this. I was looking at some of the numbers that some of the people out there were crunching, and Ottawa's got, I think, up 4 games in 17 days, and it's just the way it is. It is. It really – there are – 9 teams in this league. It's always going to be a bit funky when you have an odd number of teams. And like I said, no schedule is going to be perfect. It's just, that's impossible to do. And like I said, I do have some problems with this one. But at the end of the day, you go out there, you play the games. I know as a fan, we look at it now, we're analyzing it, dissecting it. I know when the games come, I'm not thinking of it. I'm not sitting here going, oh man, in week 4 they play, I'm watching them play BC, and then, oh man, I'm back on Thursday and they're playing Edmonton. Oh, it hasn't been very long. You're not thinking of that. You're thinking it's a game. You're cheering your team on. They're going to win. You don't think about the short.
And the players, players might think about that during the week, but once it's game time, and it's go time. So.
No player sitting there on third and inches going, oh, man, I can't believe we played 4 days ago. They're just going out there and they're playing ball. And the fact is we have a schedule. We know where we're going to be, what we're going to be doing, and that tells me the season is inching ever so closer to reality.
Yes, sir, it is.
All right, you want to talk some league news? Let's get out of the Ticat stuff and talk about some stuff across the CFL.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so there's been a number of player moves. Moves isn't exactly right, because we're going to get into some stuff that doesn't really necessarily have to do with moves, but it's interesting nonetheless. Players have been re-signed. We've seen some players released. We've seen some other players sign in places. So Ottawa's re-signed William Powell, and just today they re-signed Greg Ellingson out there in Edmonton, with where you are. Darius Bowman signed a contract extension. Chris Van Zyl re-upped with the Argos, even though they have no general manager or head coach. And I don't know if it's official yet. I'm scouring the internet. I haven't seen anything official, but it seems as if Brian Burnham has re-signed with the BC Lions. Keith Schulgen was let go by the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, and then like less than a day later was signed by Montreal. Rakeem Cato was let go by the Alouettes. Ryan Phillips has been let go by the BC Lions. We saw Swayze Waters sign with BC, and Tristan Okapelugo, whose name I'm sure I'm not saying correctly, but I hope I am, has signed with Winnipeg. So out of all these moves, Mike, and even some that I may have forgotten or not mentioned, which one do you think is the biggest?
It's a lot of good names in there. I think Bowman is huge for the Eskimos. I'm hard on him at times because he seems to sneak in one drop every game that he should catch, but the good weighs out the bad with him for sure. He's been the leading receiver in the league for the past two seasons, I believe. He's a leader for that team, and with Darrell Walker leaving, he would have been there anyways, but it's just good to have him locked up for the next couple of years. So with him there, and they got some talent, so I think that's a huge move. I think Okapelugo is a big move for the Bombers. They already have a stacked D-line to bring this guy in. He was Rookie of the Year 2 years ago in the CFL. So if he comes back and doesn't have that NFL hangover, then I think that's a huge move as well. Swayze Waters, great kicker, great punter. I think that's a big move. That's an upgrade, especially for the field goal kicking for BC after last year where Richie Leone, great punter, field goal kicker not so much. So I think that's a big upgrade for the BC Lions as well.
The Okapelugo signing to me is a fantastic one for Winnipeg. They now have Westerman on one side and Okapelugo on the other. That is as dangerous a defensive end combination as you will find in the CFL. That is that's going to be a pass rush that no one is going to want to play against. I think the Brian Burnham signing in BC is huge. He was awesome last year. And he helps take some pressure off Manny Arsenault, who was also awesome last year. And I am very, very high right now on the BC Lions. I think they, if we were to sit, I think I said it last time, and I'll say it again. I think if we were to sit here right now and I'm to pick my favorite for the Grey Cup right now, I think I'd go with BC. I really just like what that team has done. I like who they have there. You mentioned the Waters pickup. That's a great move. And it's Wally, man. You can't count Wally out. Like, it's... He's the best to ever do it, as far as I'm concerned. He's the best I've ever seen. When it comes to head coaches, I haven't seen anyone better. It's him and Don Matthews, I think, are the two best coaches I've ever seen. And due to longevity, I'm gonna give it to Wally. Greg Ellingson, I think, is a big signing for Ottawa. They were in danger of losing a lot of their weapons, and him going back there, I think, provides some continuity. But I really like the William Powell move. We saw him a couple of years ago look like he was ready to be a star in this league. And then he got injured. I believe he tore his ACL in camp last year. I think it was the first day of camp, and he was out, missed his whole season. If he can get back to being the player we saw at the tail end of 2015, that's a big keep for Ottawa, and I like that move a lot.
Yep, he was a really good player, so I think that he can be productive again, obviously, next season for them. So I think that's a good move as well. And I like the... who was the player that was released by Winnipeg, signed by Montreal?
Keith Schulgen.
Yeah, I like that move as well. They get some Canadian depth on the defensive line. He's been a good player over the years in the CFL, so I like that as well.
Okay, so Rakeem Cato was cut by Montreal, and this prompted a question from one of our listeners. I think it was Andrew who sent it to me, and he wanted to know what we thought of maybe him landing in Hamilton. What do you think about Cato as a quarterback that maybe could be on the Ticats roster?
It's an interesting idea. I like Cato. I think that he has talent. I especially like when he runs the ball. I think that he has great moves in the open field. I don't necessarily see him signing in Hamilton, though. Jeremiah Mazzoli is the backup, proven backup in Hamilton, and I don't know if Cato would want to be a backup or a third string quarterback in Hamilton. I just don't know. I don't think that's going to happen. But yeah, if they did sign him, I wouldn't be like overly upset or anything.
No, I wouldn't be angry if they signed him at all. I do think this guy has some raw tools that you can really fine tune and make into a quarterback that can play in this league. I don't see it happening though. They got their starter in Zach Caleros. They have their primary backup in Jeremiah Mazzoli, and they use that third quarterback position is kind of a developmental one, and they have Everett Golston, who they brought in last year, who's still signed. So I don't really see a place for Cato on this team. I don't think he's going to take a practice roster spot. So I think he's destined to be somewhere else, maybe a place like Toronto, perhaps even a place like Ottawa, who could need quarterbacks, maybe Saskatchewan, who he was on their negotiation list, and they dropped him, and Montreal brought him in. And I believe late last year they were trying to swing a deal for Cato, so maybe somewhere like Saskatchewan who's looking for quarterbacks, he could be a landing spot there. I just don't see Hamilton being a place where he's going to go, because I don't think they really have anything to offer him that other teams out there couldn't offer more. You know what I mean?
I just don't see it in the cards. And, you know, Johnny Football's on their neg list.
Jeez.
So,
yeah. Okay. You want to talk about that then?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, my God. So the Riders have this blew up. What was it, yesterday, I think?
Yeah.
Apparently, allegedly, according to my colleague at Three Down Nation, Justin Dunk, the Saskatchewan Rough Riders worked out Johnny Manziel, Johnny Football, which is a violation because, as you said, he is on the Ticats negotiation list, which means no other teams can work him out. The Riders have denied it. The league has said they believe it's false, although I don't think they've done much of an investigation. I don't know. This looks like a complete shit show. I don't know what's going on. It brought out some pretty aggressive talk on social media, people going after Chris Jones, people going after Justin Dunk. I will say this. If we're in a credibility off between Chris Jones and Justin Dunk, and people can call me biased if they want, because you and I have had Dunk on this show. I like him. I think he's a fantastic reporter. I think he's a good guy. I'm taking Justin Dunk in this. Chris Jones said the exact same thing when Bo Levi Mitchell said that they house a bunch of players in Saskatchewan, and he said that wasn't true. And then Dunk unearthed that here's what I found. Jones once again said that's not true, and yet they were fined by the league. I'm not entirely sure that Chris Jones is the most trustworthy person at this point. He even said, if I'm not mistaken, that remember the whole incident with Dave Dickinson last year where he told him to win with some class? He even denied that that happened, and you can see that was on video.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to sit here. I'm not going to kill Chris Jones for this. None of that. I'm just going to say that if we're talking about who has more credibility in my eyes, it's Justin Dunk.
I gotta agree with you. I mean, Jones has been proven to lie in the past. Dunk has been, everything he reports seems to happen. So, you know, nothing that he's ever put out there has come back as false. So I'm on Dunk's side as well. I think that Dunk gets a lot of flack from fans, and I'm not sure exactly why. He doesn't attack the league. He doesn't go after the league. He doesn't dislike the league. I know he's a fan of the league, and he's just doing his job. He's just reporting what he finds, and I don't see that as being hostile towards the league at all. And if he says it happens, then I'm led to believe that it happened.
He said he had it verified by two independent sources, so I kind of got to take his word. And that's, like, here's the thing: people could be mad that he reports on stuff. Like, people got mad that he tips draft picks and all that sorts of stuff. But this was a huge story in the States, Pro Football Talk, which is a major football website in the United States, linked to this story, said it was in the Hamilton Spectator. Like, this is big news. He scooped a lot of people on this. And like you said, time and time again, he says something's going to happen, and it happens. Jim Pop is going to step down as the head coach of the Montreal Alouettes. The Montreal Alouettes were adamant that that was not going to happen. No, Jim Pop is remaining our head coach. He is not going anywhere. And Dunk said, when they return from their bye week, the Montreal Alouettes will have a new head coach. No, we won't. And what happened? When they returned from their bye week, Jim Pop was out as head coach, and Jacques Chaptelain was in. This guy, time and time again, is right. I am not going to sit here and, again, I'll take myself out of it. I'm not even talking about someone who likes this guy. I'm talking about someone who, strictly objectively looking at this, going, this guy consistently says this is going to happen, and it happens. Why am I going to doubt him now?
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to see what happens here in the future, if they finally admit to it or whatever happens. But the Riders, ever since Jones has gotten there, it's been one weird situation after another, and he just seems to want to bend the rules on a constant basis. So, you know, this, the housing, you know, 90 players or whatever that weren't on the roster, whatever it was, is one thing, but to work out a player that's on the Tiger Cats negotiation list, that's another thing to me. That's like above what they did last year, because now you're taking a player that has, you know, exclusive right should be to the Ticats, and you're working them out. Now, why would they do that? If they can't sign them, why bother working them out? But I was thinking they work them out in secret. They like what they see, and then they try to make a trade for him. That's the only situation that I could see why they did this.
Well, that has to be the only situation
where they
would do something, because otherwise it makes no sense. But I'm going to ask you this. Say this comes out and is proven to be true. Should there be some, like, there's obviously going to be fines, possibly suspensions, because Chris Jones now has a history of this. This will be the second straight year that he will have done something in circumvention of the rules, and I think they were going to have to come down very hard on him. But I also, I want to get your opinion on this. Should the Ticats be compensated in any way for this? Because like you said, he's on the negotiation list. He is, quote unquote, their property right now, whether you agree with the negotiation list or not. And I've got problems with the negotiation list. I don't really think it serves a purpose in the modern CFL with the salary management system. And I think you and I have talked about this before on this show. But as of right now, that exists. The negotiation list is a thing. Johnny Manziel is on the Ticats negotiation list. Do you think that the Ticats should be draft picks or something of the like from Saskatchewan for them violating and doing this? I'm not entirely sure, but I'm curious as to what your opinion is on this.
You know, call me biased, but yeah, I think they should be given something. You can't be doing this. This, you know, say what you will about the rule, but this is the rule that's in place right now. I'd like for it to change. I think that any player that's looking at the CFL should be allowed to negotiate with any team that they want. But with the rules in place now, I think they should be given maybe a negotiation player off the Riders list or some kind of, not like a first round or second round draft pick, but, you know, just something. Because I just don't think this is right. If this is true, I don't think it's right.
Here's what I'd say. Again, this is all alleged right now, although you and I both believe that this probably happened. Say the Riders are our doctor draft pick, whatever round that may be. That draft pick should go to the Tiger Cats. Instead of it not being a pick, if the league comes down and says this is enough is enough, and we're taking your first round pick, so be it. If they're saying no, we're taking a fourth round pick, so be it. Maybe something like that. And again, I hate the fact that this happened with a player the Ticats have, because we're going to get calls of, well, you're just biased because it's your team and all that other sorts of stuff. I wish this would have happened with another player on another team's negotiation list, because I think I'd still sit here and wonder, should this team be compensated for it? And that's what I think would be fair. If the league is going to dock a draft pick from the Riders, if this is proven to be true, I think that draft pick should go to the Hamilton Tiger Cats. I think there's your compensation for violating. Not only are you're hurting your team, but you're helping the team that they didn't do anything to the Ticats, because I don't think that Johnny Manziel would ever come to Hamilton. Not that he wouldn't want to. I just don't think that there's a spot for him on the Tiger Cats team. And I had this conversation with my dad and my brother today. We had a long talk about this, because, you know, Johnny Football, like, this is a big name guy. And my dad and my brother love NCAA football. They loved watching Johnny Manziel play at Texas A&M, as did I. He was a fantastically entertaining player. So I was like, oh, man, that'd be pretty cool if he came to the CFL. But I don't think he would there's nowhere for him to play in Hamilton. So obviously, if he's going to play, it's going to be they're going to trade his rights to someone. But I think that I think if the league comes down on the Riders and they fine him or whatever, if they dock a draft pick, I think that draft pick should end up being the property of the Ticats. I think that would be fair.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, bringing Johnny Football into Hamilton, there's not really a spot, like you said. And I think no matter what, the seats are going to be sold. I mean, the Ticats are going to have sellout games no matter what, if they bring Johnny Football in or not. I think that the fans are just there because they're supporting the Ticats. Now, if you look at other teams, the obvious...
You mean the one up the road from me?
Yeah, the very obvious choice would be Toronto, because young people know Johnny Manziel. They know him. He's a big star. That would get people out to watch Argos football. It just would. I believe that. He, you know, they brought in players in the past that have had success in the States, but this guy is like above football, if you know what I mean. He's like, he was a great player in college, and but he was a bigger star just because of what he was outside of football. Now, to bring Johnny Football to the CFL, you'd want him to be on that right path in his life. You know what I mean? He can't be that constant partier that he was when he was in the NFL and what he was in college. So, listen, if the Argos got a hold of him, I think that would be a huge thing for the team. I think that it would be a moneymaker right off the bat until he maybe fails on the field. But if he was the player that he was in college, which you could look at and be like, oh, that, you know, that kind of looks like a former player that used to play up here and was pretty damn dominant, Doug Flutie. So, and I'm not comparing him to Doug Flutie, but that's just, you know, the kind of game that he plays, the scrambling.
Yeah, their style of play is very similar. It's extremely similar. Nothing's open. I'm going to run around and I'm going to make something happen. It's absolutely an apt comparison, not in their professional careers, obviously, but in the way that they play the game, very, very similar, no doubt.
Yeah, and I know I've been waiting for that next Doug Flutie ever since he left, and there may never, ever be another Doug Flutie, but just that player that, you know, brings you out of your seat, that quarterback that makes plays out of nothing constantly and just is a great passer and all that stuff. So if the Argos got a hold of Manziel, I think it'd be huge for the team. Maybe not in the long term, but you bet your ass there'd be sellout crowds at BMO Field that Johnny Manziel was with Toronto, which is, you know, I don't even know why I brought it up because it's not even in the cards right now, but that's the team that I look at in the CFL to bring in Johnny Manziel.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, and you hit all the correct points when you said he would sell tickets until he proved he couldn't do it on the field. And that's just it. He would be a massive success at the box office, and if he was able to take that and play well, he'd be an even bigger success, and the Argos couldn't hold on to tickets, I don't think. Because I think you're right. I think he's bigger than the game. Like, not, I don't mean that in the sense of he's more important than the game, but he transcends just being a football player. It's for all the wrong reasons why he transcends that, but at the same time, he is a name that people know. They're, like you said, young people know who Johnny Manziel is. And say what you want about the guy, but go watch some of his film at Texas A&M, man. This dude was friggin' exciting. No doubt about it. And I think he kind of has the skill set to play up here. It's all about if his head's in the right place. And that's pretty much where it comes with any player who wants to come from a big-time college or is a big-name player. Can they come up here and can they get their head in the right place? He's got to get it in the right place in a lot of ways. One is accepting the fact that he's playing in Canada. The other is just to get himself on the right life path. But if he's willing to put the work in, I could see him working up here. I really, really could.
Yep. I agree. I mean, he's the other name that was out there for years and years is Tim Tebow, and I don't necessarily think that he could play up here, but I'd give Johnny Manziel more of a chance succeeding up here than I would a guy like Tim Tebow. So we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know if he'll ever play in the CFL, but it would be very interesting. It would put a new interest on the CFL season if Johnny Manziel was playing in the CFL.
I think he'd probably be the biggest player to come up here since probably Rocket.
Yeah, I would have to agree with that. You look at the States media, the sports media, and they still obsess over Tim Tebow, and Johnny Manziel is still on their minds. So if he was playing professional football in Canada, that's going to draw a lot of eyes. It would. I bet you the ESPN ratings, ESPN2 ratings, would jump a big time if Johnny Manziel was playing in the CFL too. So that would be an advantage for the league as well.
So the funny thing about all this Johnny Manziel stuff is that it overshadowed the other Riders quarterback news, and that's was that they added Vince Young to their neg list. And speaking of a guy, if Vince Young would have come to the CFL in like 2007, this guy could have been one of the greatest players. He just, to this day, I will defy anyone to go back and watch the national championship game between Vince Young's University of Texas Longhorns and the USC Trojans. That may have been the best football game on any planet I have ever seen. It was so exciting. Vince Young was a one-man wrecking crew, 200 yards rushing, over 200 yards passing, like 4 or 5 total touchdowns. The man took over the game. He had all the skills necessary. Big arm, could scramble. His accuracy is the only thing that was missing, but that's something you could teach. He was just so exciting to watch. The problem with this, though, is I said 2007. It's 2017. Vince Young is 34 years old. He has not played a down of professional football since 2011. It's an interesting move, and in some of the stuff I've seen from him recently, he seems very interested in reviving his professional career. I don't know if this guy's ever going to come up here, but again, the Riders are searching high and low for a quarterback, and the Johnny Manziel stuff came out just yesterday, and before that, it was going to be this whole thing was going to be us talking about Vince Young, and now Vince Young's kind of been relegated to second fiddle.
Yeah, it kind of reeks of desperation from the Riders at this point. I mean, can you imagine a training camp with Johnny Manziel and Vince Young?
Oh,
I mean,
that'd
that'd be crazy. But I don't know what kind of shape Vince Young is in. He's been out of football for so long now. Like, if he came into the league, like, players are stubborn, right? They don't want to leave the NFL, come sign in the CFL when they're, you know, 27, 28 years old. But if you have no options, I mean, if you have no options in the NFL, the CFL is the second best thing. I mean, you're going to get a look. You're going to get film. These players should come when they're not in their late 30s. You know what I mean? I mean, at this point, if he wants to get back in the NFL, I say fat chance on that. But I don't know what they're thinking with the looking into him. I think that he's, you know, he's 35. I've heard that he's out of shape, and I just think the best years are way, way, way behind him. So I don't think that's going to materialize into anything.
No, I don't think so either. It's just kind of a shame, really, because I think this was a guy who had all the talents in the world, but just couldn't put it together in the professional ranks. But yeah, I don't really. He's like basically my age, and I know he obviously played professional sports, so he's in a little bit better shape, but he's got a good gig going. I think he's a coach or an assistant at the University of Texas, where he is still a god because he brought them a national championship. And I just don't know if he's going to leave that gig to go to Regina to play, and maybe not even play, to back up, to make CFL backup money. I don't know. I just don't see it. When I first heard it, I was thinking there's no way they would add this guy to their neg list if they hadn't talked to him and thought that there was a chance that he would come up. But ever since the news broke that he was added, there has been talk of nothing. So I don't know. This, again, like you said, maybe is a desperation move, because the Riders, if there's one thing they need a quarterback. And as much as I love, and you know how much I love Kevin Glenn, he's not their quarterback of the future. They need someone. And Vince Young wouldn't be that either. He's in his mid-30s, but yeah, they're searching high and low for a QB to get this thing going, and yeah, this is, like you said, smells of desperation.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting to see who the quarterbacks, you know, who they bring in at the quarterback position at training camp. Who's the group of guys that are gonna come in? So we'll have to look out.
Speaking of bringing guys in, let's do the reason we're sitting down on a Friday night to record this is we wanted to talk free agency before free agency happened. So let's do a little free agency preview, sir, if you're ready to go.
Mm-hmm. Let's get it going.
So we're going to talk Ticats first, obviously. Then we'll get into some predictions on where some guys might sign around the league. But I wanted to stick with the Ticats first. So here's what I'm thinking. We break this up into two groups, guys that we want the team to keep and guys that we want to see them bring in. So I have three names on my list of guys that I would like to see them keep. How many do you have a list of sorts over there, Mike?
Yeah, I got a couple guys over here.
Okay, so why don't you kick it off? Why don't you tell us who your guys are and give your reasons why you want to see them still remain in black and gold?
Well, the top of my list earlier in the week was Xavier Fulton, but he's back, so that's a check mark. I'd like to see Chad Owens back. I think that we talked about it last week that maybe he goes back to the Argos, but I'd like to see him back in a Ticats uniform for another year, maybe a full year. I know it's tough to stay healthy for a full year, but when he was in there, man, we talked about it many times. He was pretty darn spectacular. So I'd like to see him back. I'd like to see Keon Raymond back. I thought that, yes, he's getting up there in age, but I thought that the games that he played with Hamilton were really well played by him. I thought that he was very impressive in a team that didn't look impressive at all on the defensive side of the ball. So he really stood out on the defense. And Brett Maher, he's a free agent. I'd like to see him come back. I think that he had a really good year last year, punting and kicking field goals. So bring him back to solidify that position again would be amazing. And of course, at the top of the list probably is Emmanuel Davis, star in the secondary for a couple years now. Had a good season last year. I'd love to see him back in the secondary for the Ticats.
So there's a lot of guys I'd like to see him keep too. I tried to limit the list just because I didn't want to talk about everyone, but the guys you named, two of them are on mine, Keon Raymond and Emmanuel Davis. I don't know if Keon Raymond will be back. He seemed to be a bit of a stopgap player. The guys got hurt at that position. I would love to see him back. He's been a guy, and I think I said this when he was signed last year. He's a guy that I've liked for a very long time and was so happy to be able to finally cheer for him because he was playing for us as opposed to against us. I think he could be a veteran presence in that linebacking group and play that position. He played it fairly well when he was in there last year, so I hope to see him back. I don't know if he's going to be a guy that they bring back right away. He's going to sound probably is going to be someone that sits out there for a while, and then if there's nothing there, maybe he gets a training camp invite and can come and make plays for the Ticats. Big Play Ray, as he likes to call himself, and I'll stick with that nickname too because it's a good one. Emmanuel Davis was also on my list for all the reasons that you said. I don't really need to go into that. But the one guy that you didn't mention that I'm going to mention is also a receiver. You mentioned Chad Owens, former Toronto Argonaut. I'm going to mention another former Toronto Argonaut who really, really impressed me when he came in late in the season, and that's Kevin Elliott. This guy just looked so good. Like, when those three guys got released, Elliott, Hazleton, and Gurley, he was the guy who was on the bottom of my list. And out of all the guys that out of those three guys, he was the one that had the best season after he was let go. Hazleton never played for the Eskimos, as far as I can recall. Gurley
Nope.
didn't play much. Elliott came in here, had a couple 100-yard games, had like three touchdowns. Like he was fantastic. I would love to see what he could do in this receiving core with this team, having a full training camp and all that stuff. I think he could be a dynamite player, and he's the guy, maybe my number one guy that I'd like to see this team bring back. Him or Emmanuel Davis are the two that I debate between, because I think Emmanuel Davis he was clearly the Ticats' best secondary player last year, and now that we know Craig Butler's coming back and Courtney Stevens still here, keeping Davis in there when you're going to shuffle around some guys elsewhere, I think that would provide some continuity there. And I think that's he's probably the one. It used to be Terrence Tolliver. I think Emmanuel Davis is now number one. But Kevin Elliott's pretty high up there, too. I'd love to see him back with the Ticats.
Yeah, Elliott looked great with the Ticats, and I'm wondering, his profile pic on Twitter is him in an Argos uniform, which kind of bothers me, but I wonder if he'll be back or not. Is that a sign that he's going to sign back with the Argos? I don't know.
Okay, I don't mean to cut you off, Mike, but I decided, rarely do I do this, but I decided to keep Twitter open while we record. The reason I did that is because we don't know. Maybe there'd be some breaking news. And I do have some breaking news for you. We can officially announce that Terrence Tolliver is back with the Hamilton Tigercats. He just tweeted out, excited to announce I will be back in the Hammer for the next 2 years, with a picture of him signing his contract. So Terrence Tolliver is officially returning to the Hamilton Tigercats.
Nice.
Yeah,
that's
I'm with you there,
great
sir.
news.
With that's huge news.
Awesome.
Huge news.
It's awesome. Big target, great player, awesome to see.
Okay, so with that out of the way, with our guys to keep out of the way, let's talk about some guys you'd like to see the Ticats bring in. Mine is receiver heavy. I will not lie. And I'm going to say this, though. I know these guys, they're not going to sign all of them. But if one or two of these guys could be brought in, I think would be a big get. If you don't mind, I'd like to go first this time.
Yes, go.
Okay, so here are some of the guys that I – so Todd Gurley. Torrey Gurley is on my list. I still think that he, out of all those receivers, as much as I loved Elliott, if Elliott does decide, like you said, maybe he's going to go back to Toronto. Who knows? Gurley would be a great guy to bring in. Terrell Sinkfield, I would love to see Terrell Sinkfield back with the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Whether he is or isn't, who knows? But that's a guy that I would like to see them bring back. And I think this goes without saying, the biggest receiver fish in the pond, I think, especially because he's healthy, Ernest Jackson. How great would Ernest Jackson look in black and gold, Mike?
He would look spectacular in black and gold. The guy just, you know, last year just doesn't drop passes, you know? So this guy is a top-level receiver and would look awesome in black and gold.
So those are the three receivers that I'm – like, there's a ton of receivers. And this is the thing. This free agency class has got a ton of talented receivers available. We've seen a couple come off the board. Tolliver, obviously, a big one that just came off the board. Brian Burnham. But there's a lot of good receivers out there. Those are three of the ones that I really like. And the other place I'm looking at for this team is the secondary. Ryan mm-hmm. Phillips, a veteran guy, just got released by the BC Lions. He says he's going to continue his career. I'd love to see him with the Ticats. Jovan Johnson, another veteran guy who last year I was pushing for this team to try to make a trade for. They instead traded for Johnny Adams, brought him in, didn't bring in Jovan Johnson. That's fine. I don't run the team, but I would have looked at Johnson if he was willing to come. I think that's a guy they should look at to come in here too. And this one, as much as I hate to say it because I don't like him, he's a great player, but I just don't like the guy, Abdul Kinne. The guy is a baller out there. It would be a grit your teeth, cheer for him type of thing. But hey, if I can reform on Chad Owens, I can reform on almost anybody. He's too good a player. If he's available and the Ticats bring him in, that'd be a huge get. So those are my guys, those three receivers and those three DBs. Because I look at this team, they don't really need a ton of offensive line help. They don't need a ton of defensive line help. The linebackers are good. The running game is solid. They have a quarterback. They need help in the secondary, and they need bodies in the receiving core. So I looked at the receiving core, and I looked at the secondary, and those are the guys I kind of looked at. So what about you? Where are you looking? What guys would you like to see in black and gold?
Well, I would assume that people would assume that I would go after all the O-line talent out there, but I've kind of changed my tune. Well, I've been crying about the O-line for about a year now. You know, just complaining constantly like a little baby, but
it sounds a little too harsh. Are these some of the comments you've been hearing from people?
No, that's what I assume people think. But now that I look at it, I think there's a lot of depth going on there right now, and I think that's going to be improved for next year. So I am also DB and receiver heavy, and I got Abdul Kinne, which you had. I did have Brian Burnham, but he looks like he's going to sign with BC.
Oh, he would have been great in Hamilton. You know what? Yeah. It's going to be fun to watch him in BC with that offense. But man, am I going to the possibility of what he could have done here? Damn, it's a what if. Maybe there's an alternate universe where he plays for the Ticats. But damn, that's a big one to miss out on. But I can't blame him for staying in BC. That BC team, like I said earlier, they're loaded, man. They're going to be a tough team to beat this year.
Yeah, they have lost some pieces, but I think they have. They have a lot of talent there, and I think they'll be a really good team next year. Darrell Gavins, also a defensive back for the Red Black last year, played some linebacker as well, so you got the versatility with that. I'm looking at bringing in an old Ticat, Marquay McDaniel. This guy is just so productive every single year. Yes, he may be getting up there in age, but I still think that he has, you know, a couple of years left in him, and I think he's just so dependable. And I always liked him. I liked him when he was a Ticat, and I've kind of, you know, missed him. I kind of wish we kept him because he's had so many good years in Calgary. And John Ojo, I know that last year he tore his ACL, I believe, and was out for the whole season. But coming into that year, he was one of the best defensive backs in the league, one of the up and comers in the league, in that position. So those are my five guys that I picked.
That is not a bad group. John Ojo is a guy I think a lot of people are going to forget about because he missed all of last season. But yeah, he was damn good with the Eskimos in 2015.
Oh, yeah, and sorry, and AJ Jefferson. I like him. I've liked him
since
he's
Toronto.
Been with him. I think he's a really talented guy, and you know that's another DB that I wouldn't mind them bringing in.
Yeah, they're obviously, you know, we have sort of the similar philosophy here. DBs and receivers, that's where this team needs bodies. And it's funny, I don't think we mentioned – I didn't mention – did you mention any Canadian players?
I did not.
Yeah, neither did I. I think when I – and there's a reason for that. I think you look at this team with Craig Butler's return is basically a free agent signing. I know that sounds stupid and people might call me an idiot for it, but he missed all of last season. And getting him back is basically like adding a new player. And it's going to allow this team to play differently with their ratio. They don't have – Courtney Stephen can go back to the wide side corner position. Butler can play safety. They have Canadian – Ted Laurent still plays on the offensive line. You look at this and you see a team that plays three Canadians on the offensive line. You see three Canadians on defense. You still got Spencer Watt who can play – receiver. So there's your seven starting Canadians, and we haven't even talked about having like an impact player. And so like I look at this team's Canadian talent and I see some I see it as being pretty solid. So I don't think this team's going to need to go out and overpay and get Canadian guys in here. If they were to go out and grab, say, a Nolan McMillan, I don't think it's going to cost you money, but that'd be great. You have four Canadians on the offensive line and helps you with your ratio. But I'd be surprised if this team goes after a ton of Canadians, unless it's Canadians of like the Anthony Woodson types. Like that's a guy that Ty has had the last couple of years. Player like that, like a special teams guy. I could see them going and maybe getting a couple of those, but I don't really see them going after those like big name Canadian players that are going to hit the market.
No, I think since day one of Austin's regime, he's been focused heavily on Canadian talent, and that's what you got to do in this league to win. So hats off to him for building it up so we don't have to be in a panic in the offseason to get some talented Canadians on this team. Now, what do you think about... I know that CJ Gable's the guy. What do you think about bringing in a guy like Shakir Bell? Just, you know, not looking at the numbers or anything like that or the salary, but just like a solid 1-2 punch for the Ticats running game.
Oh, man. Yeah,
wait. They'd have to have a running game before we could talk about it. But anyways.
Fair enough. I love Shakir Bell. It's a shame that he plays in Edmonton and backs up a guy who I love even more than Shakir Bell and John White. Bell needs to get the opportunity to start. Actually, he's one of my bold predictions on guys who are going to sign elsewhere. I don't have him signing with Hamilton. I have him signing somewhere else. But man, if he was willing to accept a backup role and they were able to find a way to get them both on the field at the same time, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, that would be quite the. I mean, the guy has tons of speed and he's kind of a yin to the yang of CJ Gable, who does have speed but is more of a physical runner. So that would be by no means do I think it's going to happen, but it would be definitely very interesting.
Well, and could you imagine him on specials with Speedy B? Put those two guys back there on kickoffs. Good. Pick your poison, man.
That would be quite the tandem right there.
Okay, Mike. Probably the most fun I have when we do these shows is making predictions. Usually we're wrong, but it's always fun to do. So we've talked about the Ticats, guys we want to see him bring back, guys we want to see him bring in. I want to talk about the league as a whole now, and I want to talk about some predictions we have for guys who could sign elsewhere or maybe will re-sign with their teams. I want you to give three, four, five guys who you look at them as, and we're going to assume that everyone who's a free agent right now remains a free agent. So who do you see out there? Where do you see some of the big name signing, or what are some of your predictions on who's going to go where?
Well, I'm going to say that Chris Williams leaves Ottawa. They just gave a bunch of money to Ellingson. I don't know what that means if Ellingson is the number one guy now, but Williams is coming off an injury. I'm going to say he goes to Montreal. It's not much of a move from Ottawa at all. And Montreal could use some receivers after giving up on Daron Carter and the other guy they released.
Kenny Stafford.
Yes. So, I mean, and that would be a big splash in for the PR department to have a guy like Chris Williams come into Montreal with Darren Durant throwing the ball. So that's I don't necessarily, you know, think that's going to happen, but it's just a bold prediction. What else we got here? I'm going to say this is going to make Ticats fans a little mad, but I'm going to say Emmanuel Davis jumps ship and goes to the Argos just because it just seems like the thing to do. Going from Hamilton to Toronto lately. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it doesn't make me very happy. I won't lie.
No. Yeah.
But I could see it happening. But I don't like it.
No, I don't like it either. And Derek Dennis, I don't see him re-signing Calgary. There's no one's told me any information or anything like that, but I'm going to say that he lands in Saskatchewan.
Oh, okay. So interesting. I got four here for
They
you.
need help on the O-line,
Oh,
and that
do
would
they
be a big
ever?
help.
That would be big help. I also have Dennis leaving Calgary. I just look at and this is no shot at Dennis. I think he obviously most outstanding offensive lineman last year. But Calgary did the same thing with Stanley Bryant. They let him walk to Winnipeg, and they didn't really miss a beat. Calgary is not going to overpay to keep guys there. I think they let Dennis leave, and I think he heads to Montreal. I think the Alouettes know they need help on that offensive line. They made the big trade to get Darian Durant. They signed him to a big contract extension. That offensive line was putrid last year. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong, that they led the league in sacks given up. And Darian Durant is older, and he has not been the model of health since he helped guide the Riders to a Grey Cup championship 3 years ago. If they don't find some help along the offensive line, they are going to be in trouble. And who better than to get the reigning most outstanding offensive lineman? So I got Dennis going to Montreal. Shakir Bell, a guy you mentioned, I got him going to Saskatchewan. Chris Jones is the guy that brought him into this league. He knows Chris Jones. I think that he's going to go there. They don't really have, like, the unfortunate passing of Joe McKnight obviously left them without a running back. They also released Curtis Steele. I'm not even sure if they have a running back on their roster that I can think of right now. So I could see Shakir Bell going to Saskatchewan and being their number one running back, which I would think would be a big get for them.
Yeah,
Markley
I think
McDaniel.
that spot's wide
Yeah,
open in
it doesn't
Saskatchewan.
make sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. It does.
Markley McDaniel, you mentioned him maybe coming back to Hamilton. You'd like to see that happen. I got him leaving Calgary, and I got him doing something that a lot of Calgary fans are going to be pissed off at. I think he signs in Edmonton. I think he pulls a Chad Owens. I think the Stamps don't bring him back, and he kind of sticks it to him by becoming that slot receiver, that go-to inside guy for Mike Riley, and he ends up in Edmonton. And my last bold prediction is one that's not going to make me very happy, even though I'm making it. I want to see Ernest Jackson in black and gold. I don't think we're going to. I think he leaves Ottawa, and I think he becomes the number one guy in Toronto. He's buddies with Drew
That makes
Willie.
sense.
Drew Willie and him went to college together. Toronto's not that far from Buffalo, which is where they went, but a 90-minute drive. I could see him getting a lot of money to be the Argos' number one receiver.
McDaniel to Edmonton is an interesting theory. I think he would fit in, just thinking about it as soon as you said it, I think he would fit in so well with that Edmonton team who has, they got the big play receivers like Bowman and they had Darrell Walker last year, but they don't really have like a guy that can you can completely depend on him to get those, the second down and 7 yards, get that short yardage catch and get the first down. And Marquay McDaniel would fit in perfectly with that. You got a really well-run offense that could be even more well-run with McDaniel in the slot.
Well, they have Bowman. They have Shamont Chambers. They brought back speed guy. Bowman's a not. I don't know if I'd say Bowman's a deep threat, but he's kind of an everything receiver. But he's not what you would call like the slot guy. He's not the guy that you're going to throw to on second and seven to pick up 8 yards to get you the first down. You will, but he's not. That's McDaniel's bread and butter. They have Brandon Zylstra, who I think could be a breakout candidate in the CFL this year. I just think McDaniel fills a really big hole there for them in that offense. It could make Edmonton's offense even more dynamic. Think of Jason Moss as the head coach. Think of McDaniel as to how Moss used Brad Sinopoli in Ottawa his 1 year there as offensive coordinator. I think McDaniel could fill that role. What do you think about Jackson Toronto? Do you I know I'm not gonna say do you like that move. Do you kind of agree with it though?
Yeah, I mean, they don't have any receivers in Toronto, and that would be a big get for them. Arguably the best receiver in the league last year, so that would be really, really good for the Argos in their offensive scheme because this guy is just he's a tall guy, he has some speed and he's just dependable. So yeah, I could see that happening for sure.
So I know we've done this now. This is This is the third year you and I have done the show. I'm sure we've done this two previous times. I can probably look back, and I'd be interested to look back, and maybe I'll do that for the next show to see how many of these we've actually nailed in the past, because I think we've probably whiffed on more than we've gotten. But in a week's time, man, less than a week's time, Valentine's Day is when this whole thing kicks off, this free agent frenzy, and we're going to find out if we're right about something. We're probably going to be way wrong. So if you're a fan of Edmonton, Toronto, Saskatchewan, or Montreal on my end, you're probably not going to get any of these players. I just said you will. But we'll have to wait and see. It's a fun time, man. We got a schedule, free agencies around. The season's going to be here before you know it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, I was watching Sports Channel today, and, you know, baseball is starting up soon. So that means spring, and once baseball gets going, that means CFL football is around the corner. So, yeah, it'll be here before we know it.
It sure will, man. It sure will. It was great to do this again with you. Who knows when we're going to get a chance to do it again in a couple weeks, probably come back and we'll talk about where guys ended up, who the Ticats got, who the Ticats lost. But it'll be fun to talk about some concrete things again. It's always fun to speculate, but it's always fun to talk about actual news, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I think we'll come back, you know, let the players sign where they will. And once they do, we'll be right back and talking about it.
Yeah, talking about who goes, who's gone where, basically. It's man, free agency came a lot quicker than anyone expected, but it's always good because that means we're
one
close.
More thing.
Oh, one more thing.
Yeah. Okay, I saw this thing that the MLS is going to be on CTV. Why can't they put CFL games on CTV, especially the Grey Cup? Why can't they do that if they're going to put the MLS? Are they trying to raise the ratings of the MLS, and they think that this TSN thinks, or CTV or Bell thinks, that the CFL is, you know, peaked, and that's what the audience will be, and there's no use for putting it on CTV. It just kind of, I don't know. It's just weird that the MLS is going to be playing games on that channel.
Yeah, that seems, it's got to be to try to raise the profile of the league, because their television ratings are garbage, and maybe that's a way to get it into more households, and maybe people will catch it and then tune in on TSN. I don't think that CFL ratings have peaked, but I think anyone who wants to watch the CFL has TSN. Like, it's one of those things where I think that if you're a CFL fan, you're not going to get a cable package without getting TSN. You're like, no, I got to have TSN. I got to have all five TSNs. So in case there's a game on the channel that I don't, you know what I mean? Like, but yeah, that is kind of weird. Do you know when they're playing these games? Because the only thing I can think of is CTV has absolutely no programming on a Saturday afternoon, and they figure live sporting events. But you could say that about putting CFL games on there too. I understand why TSN keeps it CFL, like CFL is exclusive to TSN, because again, it forces people to buy the packages, and it kind of gives everyone a knowing exactly where it is. I don't have a problem with it personally, because I pay to get TSN, and I'm fine with that. But yeah, it's kind of weird that they would put MLS on there and never really, because the idea that I had is that it makes it exclusive to that network, and therefore it forces people to subscribe to the network, and they can make more money, so on and so forth. You'd think it would be the same with the MLS, unless it's just their ratings are just terrible and they figure no one watches it anyway, so we can throw it on this. Maybe that's opening up something for TSN to show that'll get them even higher ratings than MLS would.
Yeah, that's probably it. I feel like TSN has done so much for the CFL, and I'm so happy that every game's televised, because it didn't used to be like that. But I feel like they could do more. They could push the envelope more and get the CFL to a whole new level. You know what I mean? Like, I'm interested to see when the TV contracts are up, what kind of money they're throwing at the league. Now, this is dangerous, because we're going down a path here. We could talk for another hour. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I just wish they'd give it more of an effort. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't blame you for that at all. I appreciate and like what that network has done for this league, and having it be the official home, and like you said, every game is televised. Like, it wasn't that long ago where that didn't happen. And I'm not talking 50 years ago. I'm talking like 10. Like, before this deal with TSN, there were times when you couldn't see games. I still remember listening to games. I was living in Toronto at the time, listening to games on the radio. So, I lived in Toronto from 2002 to 2009. So that's not that long ago. It's nice that we're able to get every game. But
exactly.
You're right. They could do more. Maybe they will. We don't know. Maybe this MLS is an experiment to see if pro sports like Canadian pro sports or less like, I hate using the word niche because it comes off as if like, oh, well, only a few people watch it, but niche sports like the NFL, we know is going to draw an audience. Maybe this is to look at, say, maybe something that's a little smaller could also draw an audience for CTV. And maybe CTV will be like, we want more of this.
Yeah, that's I was just going to say, I remember when CBC didn't start showing games until Labor Day. So, you know, you look at that and you're like, okay, well, the league's come a long way, but I just want it to get better and better and better and bigger and bigger and bigger. And the one way to do that would be to simulcast the Grey Cup on TSN and CTV, I think, but it doesn't seem to be in the cards. But I just wanted to throw that out there.
Mike, this show is never going to end. More news from Twitter.
No.
Gary Lawless. What? Just tweeted out. Here's the tweet. Told Ticats making wide receiver Andy Fantuz an offer to keep him in Hamilton. ACL surgery will keep him off the field for a long stretch, but they want him. Dude, are we ever going to get to end the show?
I don't know, but
Fantuz.
I remember us, you know, having a disagreement about Fantuz. Like,
I remember that.
You know, you won,
was
you
it the last episode of last year, or was it the I think it was no. I think it was two episodes ago. The last one of 2016.
Yeah,
so. You and I did. We had a very, I wouldn't say heated discussion, but we had a gentleman's disagreement on what should happen with Andy Fantuz.
Yep, you wanted to sign him up even though he was injured, and I said I just don't see that happening, and. Why sign a player that's going to be out for the full season? But, you know, something you don't see very often in professional sports is loyalty. And if this is true, then that shows me quite a bit of loyalty coming from the Ticats.
Yeah, and I could see this being, I think we discussed it, multi-year deal. I'm going to say if we find out in the next couple of days that Fantuz is re-signed with the Ticats, I'm saying minimum two-year deal. I'd probably even go maximum two-year deal. Give him that, and here's what I'd say. This is what I would do, and I probably said this before the last time we talked about this. You give him a decent amount of money this year, even though he's probably not going to play, but you load up that second year. You give him enough that he can live off of while he's rehabbing, and then in the second year, you give him this is probably the same amount, and then just jack it up with bonuses. Hey, if you can do this, if you could do that, because last year he had his best year since he was the most outstanding Canadian in this league, and I still, to this day, think if he would have finished that season healthy, he would have been the East's most outstanding player, not Ernest Jackson. I really believe Fantuz would have nailed that award. So I'm glad. Obviously, I said I wanted to see them keep him, and it's good to see that this is in, if not done, it looks like it's something the team wants to do. And we talk a lot about loyalty, and we talk about how teams aren't loyal to players, and understandably so. But at the same time, I think this shows something, and this is we're fans of an organization that looks to be trying to do right by its players, and that goes a long way with me. It makes it an easier team to cheer for, to be honest with you, by looking at it and going, they want to do right by this guy, and that's a good thing.
It's a nice, refreshing thing to see, because you don't see it like at all from the players' side or the business side.
Yeah, so that's something to keep an eye on. By the next time you and I sit down, hey, by the time we post this show, who knows?
What did you? Oh my God, Doug Flutie just re-signed in Toronto. and Darren Flutie's come back to play with him.
Oh boy, it's 2006 all over again. Do you remember when that was a thing, when there was a talk that Darren Flutie was going to come out of retirement, and Doug was going to play for the Ticats, and
was that a Marty York rumor or what was that?
I believe it was, but man, what a what if, eh?
I know. I remember my dad talking about it back in the day, hearing that rumor, and they played one year in BC, and it was an incredible year. I think Flutie threw for like almost 7,000 yards, like 6,600.
Yeah, I think that was the year he broke the record for yards in a season.
I remember that rumor. I think it might have been like rumored to come back to play with the Ticats, but
yeah,
I
it was.
Remember.
No, it was. It was to play for Hamilton.
Yeah.
Could you?
Yeah,
and I just remember my dad told me that one day, and I was like, man. And the first thing that popped up is they are going to be able to pay Doug Flutie's salary simply on the amount of Ticats jerseys with his number and name on it that they will sell.
Yep, exactly. I mean, I have a Flutie jersey. It's not Doug, obviously, but I got my Darren Flutie jersey, and it would have been such a cool thing to see the brothers come back and play for the Ticats, but you know, didn't happen. So
no, but in an alternate universe, it did, sir. And this team won like five straight Grey Cups with those, even though Flutie was like in his like early 40s when this rumor was taking place. But I still have no doubt he would have come up here and balled out.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, anyway, I think that's as good a point as any to call this a day, Mike. Awesome show. Love doing it. Can't wait to do it again when we get to talk about who stayed where. Probably talking about Andy Fantu sticking with the Ticats, which I nailed 2 months ago. Score.
Yep.
Anyway, out there, all you listeners, remember you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, or you can listen to it or download it over at 3downnation.com. We didn't take specific questions this week. We did get some, and we worked them into the show. But if you want to ask us a question and get it answered on the show, you can hit us up on Twitter. Mike, your Twitter handle, please.
It is Mike_Ticats.
And you can find me at JoshSmith_82. And you can always hit up us in the questions. Give us the questions in the comment section on 3Down Nation. You got a longer question you want out there? Throw it in there. So that was a very long and very interesting episode number 67, the Peter Dykowski episode. Yeah, we should have got Peter Dykowski to be on the show.
Yeah, we should have got him on.
Wasted opportunity. Anyway, that was episode 67 of Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.